Today's episode of Invisible Capital is sponsored by Intralinks, a leader in virtual data rooms and secure document exchange for banks engaged in debt securitizations and transactions that require sharing of confidential content with multiple collaborators. Intralinks solutions support small business lending, such as managing loan and grant applications under the Payment Protection Program and automation of legacy bank processes at scale. To learn more, visit intralinks.com. Welcome to PitchBook's Invisible Capital Podcast, where we use data, research, and conversation to reveal important trends and issues in the private markets.
Welcome back to PitchBook's Invisible Capital Podcast. We're devoting season one to discussing the work of PitchBook writers and analysts during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Adam Lewis, a reporter for PitchBook's private equity newsletter, and I'll be joined today by our news team editor, Alec Davis, and senior financial journalist, James Thorne. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Adam.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, we brought in the heavy hitters today because we're tackling a pretty big issue. I brought both of you on to talk about the U.S. government's Paycheck Protection Program, which was launched in early April to help small businesses impacted by COVID-19. So far, the U.S. Treasury's Small Business Administration program has provided about $540 billion in loans, some of which might end up being forgivable. And I think there are about $130 billion left to dole out. Alec, you want to just jump in and explain what was the ultimate goal of the program? And do we know yet how successful it was?
Sure. Well, you know, this is basically an outgrowth of the emergency legislation that Congress threw together to, you know, rescue businesses, to save jobs. The whole point of it is to make sure that companies, whether they're for-profit or nonprofit, companies of all sizes potentially could apply and get some emergency loans, forgivable, as you say, to just protect their payroll. And we actually don't know how successful it has been so far. I mean, we have some anecdotal information, I think, which we can get into, but it remains to be seen how effective it has been.
Yeah, drawing things back to the private markets a little bit, James recently wrote a story about the number of both private equity-backed and venture capital-backed companies that got money through this program, which is interesting because it was, you know, doled out by the Small Business Administration, which you would not really associate private equity or venture capital with small business, I guess, to put it nicely. But James, what did our data show when you really dove into that?
Yeah, so what we found was that there were more than 8,000 companies with private backing from venture capital and private equity. They took around $13.4 billion worth of federal loans. They say that helped save almost 500,000 jobs, which is pretty significant if you know the SBA data can be trusted. But you know, that remains to be seen because, you know, immediately after they released this list of companies, which was a small section of the larger pool. So it was all the companies that had taken out more than 150 grand. So it wasn't everyone. But what it showed was that there were a lot of companies that like you said, wouldn't consider to be at least part of the public's understanding of what a small business looks like. So scooter sharing startup Bird was on the list, but they said, hey, we didn't even apply for a loan. You saw Turo, the car sharing company, as well as their competitor, GetAround, were both on that list. You know, you had F45 Training, a gym
Mark
startup
Wahlberg.
By Mark Wahlberg. That's
Marky Mark.
Currently merging with a SPAC to go public. Co-working company Knotel was on that list, a really big startup there. So yeah, there were quite a few companies that, like you said, wouldn't fall into, they might have passed the SBA's bar for what a small business is, but you know, in the court of public opinion might not meet that standard.
Yeah, from the companies that we reached out to, I mean, this could be maybe for both you and Alec, because I know both of you talked to some. What was their justification for taking this money?
Well, take, for example, GetAround, as James mentioned. I reached out to those folks, and they maintain that, you know, this directly kept that company afloat at a critical time. You know, this is a company that is a car sharing platform, a marketplace to be able to do car sharing, and As you can imagine, during the pandemic, that kind of business has been really, really quiet, to say the least. But there have been some people that, you know, really wanted to continue to use those kinds of services. And as the economy reopened in some places, they had a role to play. And, you know, their answer to this, their message to us was that this actually, you know, like a lot of gig economy companies, this provided their company with the ability to like continue to operate, basically. And and that kind of business helps people bring in a little extra income if they, you know, lost some other job. So it is kind of an interesting situation in their case.
Shouldn't they be able to just tap their venture capital backers to, you know, get a few months of payroll rather than get taxpayer funded money to sustain operations? I guess that's the first thing that comes to my head.
That's what's come into the minds of a lot of people, including people in the venture community. It's not at all a widely or conventional view that venture-backed companies should be in line for loans like this. They have their networks, and although checks are not being written as frequently or in the same kind of generosity as they were pre-COVID, it is an ecosystem that can finance companies that have a shot at you know, future growth. So this is a problem for the industry to address.
Yeah, just to advocate for startups for a second, you know, a lot of people pointed out when I spoke with them that, you know, just because a company raised money 9 months ago doesn't necessarily mean they can go to the same group of investors and say, hey, we're hitting some hard times. We really need some cash right now, or we're going to have to lay people off. You know, when the economics of the business change, especially in a high risk environment, investors might look at that and say, you know what, we had a good run, but it's time to pull the plug. And we have this, we have a little bit of data. This is gathered from news reports tracked by layoffs.fyi. You know, this website tracked more than 500 startups, laid off more than 70,000 people. The job losses are, the risk of job losses is real. And I think there are a lot of people who would argue that high growth startups, you know, in a lot of cases deserve PPP money just like restaurants and bars do.
Yeah, James, you recently spoke with a lawyer, a startup lawyer, who kind of specializes in helping out these companies deal with potentially the legal ramifications of taking money. What was your main takeaway from your conversation with him?
So, yeah, I spoke with Blake Ilstrup from ORIC, a law firm, like you said, that works with a lot of startups. And, you know, he was advising companies to really take the standards that the SBA had set out really seriously. In a lot of cases, he was saying, you know, you should sit down with your board, make sure you get kind of a unanimous consensus around whether or not to take these loans. Because there's the risk, yes, that you'll be audited, that you might have to return the funds. But there's also a reputational risk. If you're Airbnb and you're taking PPP money, that might not go over so well ahead of an IPO. He was also saying that right now he's dealing with companies that took out PPP loans who are in the process of an M&A deal, and this acquirer is taking issue with the fact that they took a PPP loan. They want the target company to return the funds so that the merger won't be subject to any kind of additional scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the affiliation rules to me were just so arbitrary. I mean, it was like 500 employees or more, or like, how did they come to the 500 number? Do we know why the government set it up the way they did?
Let's talk about what affiliation rules are.
Yeah, let's talk first. Let's talk about affiliation rules.
Let's define that.
Let's define what affiliation rules are. I mean, it was really, you know, changing quickly, and I cover private equity, and this was certainly something that a lot of PE-backed companies dealt with, in that, you know, maybe their company had 150 employees, but their investor who had given them money and maybe owned a majority stake in the business, their combined portfolio was way above 500 employees. And so technically they didn't qualify for the program, which a lot of private equity industry lobbyists were somewhat upset about, because venture capital backed companies basically got a different treatment.
Yeah, well, I believe these rules existed well before the CARES Act was passed, well before anyone had heard the term PPP in this context. This is something that the SBA has always kind of held as a standard for the types of companies that could access Small Business Administration loans. But they relaxed the rules a little bit. They made it more inclusive. They wanted this money, in short, to get out to more companies than would normally be considered small businesses by the federal government. You know, the affiliation rules, it's a very different conversation when you're talking about a private equity firm than when you're talking about a venture capital firm, because VC firms or VC-backed companies typically aren't majority controlled by their investors, whereas in private equity, a lot of the times they are. But it was actually more complicated than that. So it's not just who owns you, but it's who controls you. So there are, you know, a lot of voting rights issues that could muddy the waters. But yeah, I think a lot of these startups, they, you know, if they were smart about it, they looked at that issue really closely, because, you know, that could be a really hard pill to swallow down the road if you took out a couple hundred grand and then had to return it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also important to point out, in fairness to the companies that did apply for the loans. And by the way, just applying for it doesn't mean that you're going to take it. So some definitely fit into that category. But it's important to think back to those really dark early days of the pandemic, when city after city was seeing rising numbers and there was a lot of confusion, and you know, business was kind of grinding to a halt here and there. And these companies, which really cut across all industries, had really no idea where things were going. So there might have been, to some extent, a little bit of a panic. That's what we're hearing about, to some extent. So they were acting in part almost like from an insurance standpoint. I mean, I know people who applied for this who were just thinking, I've got to do whatever I can right now to just act urgently, because I'm confronted with like a wildfire.
Right, right. And I get all that for sure. But do you know what? This may be a tangent, but what grinds my gears personally when I think about all of this is venture capital investors and private equity both get such great preferential tax treatment with carried interest, right? Their salary is like, you know, they're getting capital gain salary, and now they're getting bailed out on top of that while the rest of the economy is dealing with, you know, with the same exact same wildfire that yep. that Alec just mentioned. And yeah, I don't know. It upsets me when I think about it too much, but I guess that's the way it is. And it's probably not going to change anytime soon.
Well, I have two words for you, Nancy Pelosi.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, yeah. Nancy Pelosi represents, she's the Speaker of the House. She represents part of Silicon Valley, the San Francisco area. And she actually teamed up with Kevin McCarthy, her counterpart on the Republican side of the aisle, to push a lot of this legislation through. I mean, this is something that would have ordinarily, under ordinary times, it would have no chance
right.
of going through. And part of it has to do with those kinds of tax benefits that this industry enjoys. And that is a very controversial, that if before the COVID epidemic, those carried interest benefits were actually a campaign issue, keep in mind. I mean, that still might come to be another campaign. It might be resurrected when we really get into, you know, the fall, but under the emergency situation and the fact that you had these two, well, I didn't say that Kevin McCarthy is also from California.
Right.
So, you know, you had these two key members of Congress that really made this happen, made it possible.
Yeah, I think fear of the blowback from this program might have been what prompted a lot of VCs to say, you know what, let's not take that money, or told their startups not to take that money. You know, they don't enjoy the same vitriolic attitude that PE gets, and I think they'd like to keep it that way. You know, we're more than a decade from the last recession, and people are still pretty upset about the bailouts that happened, during that rescue operation. So I think there's a real risk here that both industries overall could suffer if there's a sense that this money wasn't taken in good faith.
Yeah, venture capital definitely flies a little more under the radar in terms of public scrutiny compared to private equity and private equity backed companies. I think Ruth's Chris Steakhouse ended up returning their PPP loan, and I know that their private
It took them about 18 hours, I think.
18 hours. It was pretty quick. They're like, what? You have 100,000 employees? Like, you're not a small business. And also, if you're tapped into the private equity world, I think more people are becoming aware that there is this enormous cash pile just sitting there. So to take out money when you're already over-leveraged just seems insane.
Yeah, but guys, I don't know of a single venture-backed company that did what Ruth Chris did and turned the money back over. There might be some, but they're not saying if they did. I don't know, James. Do you know of any that did?
I know of one, but it was a very different situation. There was a Chinese biotech company that returned some PPP loans after Axios ran a story on them.
Was that like over antitrust? Or are they being investigated? Or
I guess they have some ties to the Chinese government, and
probably not a good time to be taking out money from the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Was it TikTok?
No, the company was called BGI Group.
Okay.
And there were actually two other Chinese companies, Byton and Neo, both EV startups that took out loans. But I think they might be officially headquartered in the U.S. or at least have operations in the U.S.
Do either of you think we're like drawing too much from the data here, given that a lot of the what was sent back from the Small Business Administration about, you know, disclosing which companies got loans proved to be inaccurate?
Well, that definitely proved to be a kind of black eye for the whole program. The fact that there's really a lack of confidence in what we're looking at here. We don't really know for sure how much of it is inaccurate. It's not like anybody has come out and demonstrated clearly that it was a massive amount of inaccurate names that were in there. But there definitely were enough to take away from it. So the accountability that is going to have to happen is just off on a really, really wrong foot. But to your other point, are we taking too much from this? Maybe so in some cases. The fact that like some venture capital firms got named as applicants and or recipients.
And private equity, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's a huge problem.
Do we know what's next for the PPP program, if there's going to be more relief? I mean, obviously, there's still hundreds of billions of dollars left to dole out here. And it almost seems like they didn't maybe get enough demand on the second when they re-upped it. But now maybe companies will start struggling again.
Well, first of all, you're right. There's a big chunk that's still there. So a lot more could be issued. The other thing is Congress and the White House are currently negotiating additional rescue money that would partly go toward extending the PPP program. So I think that there's going to be some changes to it in all likelihood, but it's not going anywhere anytime soon, especially with the country falling into a potentially even deeper hole jobs-wise.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about what happened over the last couple months. A lot of these, this PPP money, a lot of it was, meant to help companies get through an 8-week period, 8 weeks of payroll, basically being forgiven here. And now companies are starting to have to, fill out the applications for like, okay, we use this money, we spent it on payroll, and, here's kind of the evidence. And they're filing that, about to start filing that with their banks. But now we're in a situation where clearly this pandemic is not an 8-week phenomenon. There will, if the, the government is very likely to come through with more help, and it remains to be seen what that's going to look like.
Yeah, and we should point out or reiterate again that, some of these loans, if requirements are hit, will be just completely forgiven. They'll be grants at the end of the day, right?
Yeah. And
but not for everybody.
Not for everybody. Right.
So in a recent Washington Post op-ed, Steve Case, the CEO of venture capital firm Revolution, wrote that Congress should really think about the next economic care package as a way to create new jobs, not as a way to save the old jobs, that a lot of which might be gone for good. You know, he was making the argument that, you know, if you make it really easy for early stage startups to access PPP loans, that over the long term could encourage new businesses to grow that are really built for this post-COVID world. And he also wanted those loans to be tied to, you know, whether or not the startups create jobs. And if they don't create jobs, he thinks, you know, the money shouldn't be forgivable.
What are we working on next towards? I know, James, that you've been covering this since April. I've written a couple stories about it, but what's next on the PPP coverage docket?
There were a number of VC-backed startups who took out loans and then raised money from their investors either shortly before or shortly after they took money from the PPP program. And that really kind of raised some red flags for us because, you know, there's a stipulation within the program that companies should consider what are your other sources of liquidity? Like, are you able basically to raise money from elsewhere or do you really need to take money from the PPP program? And if you're raising a couple million from investors, I mean, I think to a lot of people that would indicate that, yes, you do have other sources of liquidity to
right.
tap here.
You can cover 3 months of payroll with that, maybe.
Yeah, particularly since, as you said, a bunch of the companies in question, they actually had, in some cases, multi-million dollar funding rounds just earlier this year, which is gonna call into question whether they truly fall into this criteria and meet the criteria that James was talking about.
Yeah, and another kind of thing to point out is even though, you know, we saw these companies on this list, as Alec mentioned earlier, it doesn't necessarily mean they took the money. From the very beginning, the SBA's guidance on who was and wasn't eligible was kind of a moving target. I mean, they kept coming out with these frequently asked questions and were like, you know, and kind of clarified their point of view that way. But some of those came out many, many weeks after the program had launched. So it's possible that a lot of the companies that we saw on this list never actually took out the money, but they, you know, applied early on.
Right. Because if you took money out from this program and you weren't, and you got approved and it turns out that you shouldn't have, I mean, is that fraud or do we know what, or is it just like a slap on the wrist?
The government has definitely indicated that they're not going to be hounding companies about this anytime soon. Secretary of the Treasury Mnuchin said that he was even wanted to potentially forgive all loans below a certain threshold. So, you know, they definitely want to encourage companies to take this money. They want to keep employment as high as possible. There's an election in November, if you haven't heard.
Yes,
so they definitely want the economy to be on as good a footing as it can possibly be for the next few months.
Awesome. Well, James, we will certainly look forward to some of your coverage of the PPP, not fiasco, but PPP program and all of the privately backed companies that are continuing to get money here over the next few weeks. Both of you guys, thank you so much for coming on the program. This was awesome.
Thanks, Adam.
You bet. Thanks, Adam.
As always, you can go to pitchbook.com/podcast for the show notes and other relevant materials. I'm Adam Lewis, and thanks for listening to the Invisible Capital Podcast.